Kelly the Authority, please join me salute the flag.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Now we'll go to awards and presentations. We're changing number one, the student scholarship recognition to PM because we have some that aren't here yet. So we'll start with Osceola Reeves.
Chris, you're going to come up and thank you. Osceola Reeds.
And I just, and I'll have Tila, she is the account coordinator for Osceola Reeds, and explained it a little bit, but KUA was named Partner of the Year for the last year for our support of a reading initiative that is a partnership with the Osceola School District. So I'll have Tila talk about it, and then you can present that to the chairperson.
Yeah. Thank you. So Osceola Reads is a five-year initiative within the county of Osceola where kids ages preschool through third grade have access to a free mobile literacy app. And we have partnered with KUA at many events where we were able to have free space, and they gave us tablets, and we were able to give kids ages 3 through 5 free Amazon Fire tablets. So I am here to present this award to you guys. Thank you for being such an awesome partner for us.
Thank you. I think that's our honor to be a part of it. So, Lyman Rodeo?
Yes, ma'am. Aaron Hadley, would you come up?
Good afternoon. All right, as you're aware, this is we've done this about every year since 2001. So coming back every year to present these awards are great. So as you're aware, we had two competitions this year. So we had the FMEA Florida Lineman competition was on March 2nd, and that consisted of 27 teams and 77 apprentices. And then in March 30th, so it was in the same month, we turned around and went out to Colorado Springs for the APPA Line Workers Rodeo, which consisted of 78 teams and 130 apprentices. So really quick, we're Chris had put together a really nice aerial shot and video for that competition, so we'll play that really quick. This is a great thing for us to participate in for, you know, demonstrating the safety and speed of what we do for a living. One thing, like I said, we went to the APPA out in Colorado Springs, and It was a balmy 17 degrees while we were out there and had about 3 inches of snow on the ground. So it was a new experience for us getting up in the morning and having to scrape ice off of our vehicles before we headed out to the rodeo. But I wanted to read a letter really quick. Brian had received this. This is from Michael Hyland from the he's the Senior Vice President of Engineering Services at the APPA. He said, on behalf of the American Public Power Association, thank you for supporting the 2019 Public Power Line Workers Rodeo hosted by Colorado Springs Utilities. Each year, the association strives to provide an environment for professional line workers to learn, network, and compete with the peers from across the national public power community. We hope that we succeeded in this goal while providing a valuable experience for all individuals involved. This year, nearly 400 competitors, 78 journeyman teams, and 130 apprentices from across the country prove their dedication to and pride for the work that they do on public power's behalf. Your competitors demonstrated precision, agility, and most importantly, safety throughout the rodeo, and I commend them for their professionalism. I hope your employees enjoyed their experience in Colorado and that they will join us for the 2020 Public Power Line Workers Rodeo hosted by Kansas City Board of Public Utilities on April 17th and 18th of 2020 in Kansas City. So we look forward to that. I don't think it'll be quite as nice in Kansas City as it was in Colorado Springs, but I've been there a few times, but there's a lot. That's right. They have good steaks. So I will, as we go forward, I'm going to go ahead and do like we've done in the past, have all the competitors line up in the back, and then we'll take a group photo. So for the competition, we had 8 apprentice linemen compete in the FMEA lineman competition amongst the 77 other competitors around the state of Florida. So I'll start bringing them up. Lars Ackerman. Shane Yarborough. Nathan Galt. Billy Suffin. And then the next 3 apprentices competed in both the FMEA and the APPA, and that was Chris Kidding. Next one, Austin Gunther. He earned a first place trophy in the apprentice mystery event. That was the pole top pin and insulator change out at the FMEA company. Not least, Brendan LaFlame, he earned the 3rd place trophy in the load transfer at the APPA rodeo. So we had 2 journeyman teams compete in the FMEA lineman competition amongst the 27 other teams statewide. That was, we'll begin with the first team is Tony Nasco, Kevin McKenzie, and Danny Kelly. Second journeyman team of Austin Franey, Shane Paris, and Billy White, and they also had Robert Diaz as the alternate. They brought home a first place event trophy in the equipotential grounding and insulator changeout, and a 4th place overall in the state. They also competed in the APPA rodeo among 78 teams, where they earned a 3rd place trophy in the Hurtman Rescue. They were only 0.3 of a second out of 2nd place and 2 seconds out of 1st in that competition. Wow. One of the things I want to point out, I mean, the Hurtman Rescue is one of the most important events that we have, and our teams usually place in those events. And, you know, we take great pride in that because you're simulating helping an injured worker. That's a big accomplishment. Also, we took 1st place in the 2 mystery events in both categories, and those are the events that you don't know what they are until you get there. And we got both 1st place trophies in those events at the FMEA Rodeo. So. Last few I want to recognize, you know, with any competition, you have to have evaluators to determine the outcome of that and who receives this hardware to bring in. So I'm going to recognize a few. Robert Diaz, he came up already. He served as an event judge for the FMEA competition. I had David Wolf. He was the chief judge for the FMEA competition and an event judge for the APPA rodeo. And is David here?
No.
And also, this was my 6th year that I served as the master judge over the journeyman competition. So great accomplishments. You know, we want to thank you for your support. One last thing I want to point out, if you recognize the shirts of the guys are wearing, This was a brainchild of theirs. They wanted to memorialize and recognize the officers that were brutally murdered with KPD, and they wanted to do something on their behalf. That's why we have Back the Blue.
We also need to recognize Director Hemphill, who showed up at the state competition in Gainesville to support the
guys. That was your second annual, wasn't it? Yeah. Well, thank you for supporting us. I appreciate it. So, ready for a photo? All right,
great.
Chairman Meter, we have a few service awards. If you'd like to join me up front. Four service awards this month. Our first one is to Eddie Booch, a lead lineman in our line operations division. Eddie, where are you? Come on up. Next, Ben Rafford. Ben is an electric meter testing technician in our E&O department. We're recognizing him for 20 years of service with the organization. Next, Terry Farley. Data and telecom service manager in IT. We're recognizing him for 20 years of service. Anyway. And finally, where's Waverly? What do we have? There you are. Waverly is a collection customer service rep, two, in our customer service department. We are recognizing her for 30 years of service. And next, we've got our employee of the month. Where's Chris at? Chris Swagar. I want to say Swagger. I've been saying Swagger all week long. Well, your employee of the month, and you can walk with a little Swagger. Utility worker in our power supply division. Chris was instrumental in preparing our team for the International Power Grid Conference. We appreciate that. Chris has a positive attitude and work ethic, and that's contagious to the others around him. His efforts were a large factor in the glowing comments on the facility from our international peers. Every day, Chris arrives to work with a positive attitude and high energy level and sparks enthusiasm, creating a motivated environment within the department. I truly appreciate it. Chris has been here a little over a year. His dad works with us over in our Central Services Division, and has been recognized as Employee of the Month 3 times. Dale, he's coming for you. I've got September 2000, July 2009, and July 2015.
Wow.
Beginning with our chair.
Yes.
Director Van Meter.
Thank you, ma'am.
See every day and know you, and appreciate you.
Thank you.
Vice Chair Kathleen Backer.
Congratulations.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
A little money.
All right, thank you.
Director Hemphill.
And a reserve parking space for the month.
Thank you, ma'am.
Mayor Alvin.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Take this for Osceola Arts.
Director Urbino.
Congratulations, Chris.
Thank you.
It is a day off with pay.
All right, very nice. Thank you. Thank you.
Director Ortega.
All right.
Thank you.
Tell us about the KUA Student Scholarship.
Okay. Well, each year, as part of our support of the Osceola Education Foundation, KUA awards a total of 5 scholarships, and then next year it will add a 6th scholarship that the board named in honor of Jim Welsh. But we are fortunate to have all 5 of our this year's recipients. So if you all could come up, and Annabelle, if you could just hand them. And then we want to get a picture with all the students with the board at the end. First, we have Mackenzie Amos from St. Cloud High School. Going to University of Florida.
Okay.
You got some Gators out there. Next, Nanette Disler from Harmony High School. UCF. Woo! Member of the Osceola Virtual School. We'll also be going to UCF. And then next we have the Dr. George Gant Community Involvement Award. And this actually was given to the student in Osceola County that had the most community service hours. How many hours are required? 100 hours to graduate? Okay. So 100 hours, and Luke, how many hours do you have? 1,000 hours of volunteer service. He's graduating from Osceola School for the Arts, and he is going to University of Florida. I want to mention, too, that I think 3 of you dual enrolled, right? So you're graduating from college before you're graduating from high school. So that's pretty cool. And then finally, we have Chase Fuller of Osceola High School. Chase is the recipient of the Reginald Hardy Line Worker Scholarship Award. And so he will start that program soon, and hopefully we'll get a new recruit out of that. So anyway, if we could go ahead and have the board members come up, and why don't we have you all go around? It'll just be easier that way. Thank you. You can just go around with that.
Good to see you again.
Oh, thank you.
Can we have you? I want to center under the logo there so we can kind of get all the done. There we go. Yeah, that's good. All right, here we go. 1, 2, 3, one more. Last one. Turning parent. There we
go. Thank you.
Thank you. The gift we gave them for graduates is they can take a little bit of KUA with them. They're charging blocks, so they can charge up their phones or their laptops or whatever they need to go when they're away at college. So you can enjoy that. Thanks.
And I will say we had the pleasure of meeting them at the banquet, or at the event, and they're delightful young men and women, so congratulations. Okay, now it's Hear the Audience time. And this is the time, and anybody wants to stay for the rest of it can stay, but the other people can leave.
I know, right?
Don't forget your coffee.
Yeah, we got to put it back on the shelf.
With everybody. Congratulations.
Those are nice shirts. Yeah, yeah. Thank you. And everything. I don't have this.
If they find a size large, let them.
One more? I got it. Okay. I'll get you one.
It's pretty tight. You know, large or extra large.
As we get back to the agenda, E is consent agenda. Any discussion or anybody want something cool to talk about?
I move we accept the consent agenda.
We have a motion. Do I have a second? We have a motion, a second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Like sign if you're opposed. Passes. Public hearing. Informational presentation, there's none. Old business.
Yes.
Brian?
Yes, Madam Chair. We've got three items under this strategic plan and capital budget review. The first item will review how we performed on our 2019 goals associated with our five-year strategic plan. Kathy V, who you all know, will be presenting those results. She'll be followed by Kevin Crawford, who will provide a presentation of KUA's fiscal policies and reserves. And finally, staff will be bringing back a more detailed version of the capital program for board review and discussion. A few comments about the capital budget. When we brought you the preliminary five-year capital plan last month, we indicated that we hadn't yet completed the trending for line extensions projects, which accounts for a significant amount of the funding in the plan. That work is done now, and it's reflected in the packets that you all received. Also, to help facilitate any discussions, comments, or questions regarding the specific projects within the capital program, staff has prioritized each and every project in the three categories, and I'll just highlight those real quick for the record. A, being those projects that are essential due to regulatory or contractual obligation. B, those projects that are essential due to maintaining our current level of service and reliability. And C, those projects that enhance our current level of service or customer experience. And with that, I'll turn it over to Kathy V for the review of the 2019 strategic goals.
Thank you.
Okay, let me get acclimated here.
Good afternoon.
It's good to see you all again. This is the third year we've been together talking about strategic planning and the second year of the actual plan. What I'd like to do today is, you know, move fairly quickly through this because I know you have a lot on your agenda this afternoon. And most of the news today is good, although it's a little bit different than last year, and we'll talk about that. Just to remind you, I know some of you, most of you were in the planning process, and some of you came on a little bit after that. But we did have quite an extensive process when we first put this in place. We interviewed a lot of the board members, a lot of the staff, and we came together and did a lot of reviews and went over some things. And I think at the end of the day, we came up with a pretty good first start. It's not going. Should I use the mouse? There we go. Is that you or me? Let's try it again. Okay, we're good now. Okay, so very quickly, let's just talk a little bit about what we did in the planning process. We reviewed the vision statement, and we all agreed we still like it just the way it is. We reviewed the mission statement, and we all agreed we still like it the way it is. And then we developed a core purpose. And if you'll remember, we talked a little bit about Disney, and their core purpose was to make people happy. And so there was a lot of discussion, and at the end of the day, y'all came up with to enrich the quality of life for our customers and community. And I really like this. I've seen other utilities and other companies come up with stuff. This in particular, I think, is really important because it's not, you know, to be the most reliable, even though you're very reliable. It's not to be the cheapest. It's really about the community and what you do for the people here. And I think that's pretty cool. I mean, I think it says something just slightly different than some other utilities. So I thought that was a good job, good effort on this. One of the things I wanted to talk about is the three areas that we came up with that we were going to focus on as a company, and that's the customer, financial, and employee. And these are kind of this is the three legs of the stool that make the foundation for the plan. I don't see these changing anytime in the near future, but your strategies and your goals, objectives, and measures will continue to change over time. But these are really the three things that make this utility what it is. A couple of things I wanted to talk about before we get right into the results is you may recall that last year when I presented your results, we also talked about strategies for the next year, which is now. The staff is recommending, and I concur, that we do a couple of things. One is to move the planning process into the fiscal year so that, you know, we started looking at it and measuring it from March to March, and that's a real odd time frame, but there were reasons for that. But now I think we want to get on a fiscal year basis, and it makes it a lot easier to measure and monitor and evaluate. And I think it will make a lot more sense, you know, when you do budget and everything like that. So that's one recommendation. The other one is because of that and because you have a new general manager, we'd also like to work on the strategies over the next several months and then come back to you in the October-November timeframe and present the new strategies. So whatever the goals might be for 2020, we would come back in the next 4 to 5 months. Is that about right? October, November, and be ready to roll January 1st. So that's another recommendation. One thing I wanted to mention, too, is as we look at the results, we came up with a little bit different way to show you the results. So you might remember last year we had these gauges, and the gauges were like sometimes and never and almost, and it was, frankly, maybe a little bit too much. And so this year we've kind of revamped it, and staff came up with these green lights, which I'll show you, that just simply are, it's either you made the goal or you didn't make the goal. There's none of this almost made it or made it above it or any of that. So we've kind of eliminated that from the process. I think those were kind of the basic points that I wanted to touch. Did I miss anything? Okay. So let's move on. And again, this is just a reminder that these are the three buckets, and these are the items that go in the buckets. This is kind of letting the cat out of the bag. This is an overview of your goals and objectives and measures for the year and how you did. So you can see on the right-hand column, all the check marks are you made the goal, and that red X's are you didn't make the goal. And last year, you'll recall, you made them all, and this year you didn't. And so I actually see that as a good thing. And especially when you look at why you didn't make them and the ones you did not make, it's like, okay, that's okay. I mean, it's not such a bad thing. So we'll talk a little bit more about that in depth. So let me first start with system reliability. And this is your SAIDI and SAIFI, which, you know, really is just a measure of the length of interruptions in your service and the number of interruptions in the electric service. So you made the goal this year. It was to be 5% below the average, and the FMPOA overall average was 78.8, and you hit 43.4, and those are minutes. In the SAIFI, you had a goal, and you was the same, but in FMPA, their overall average was 1.13, and you hit 0.850. So again, you know, you have a very reliable electric system. That's kind of the bottom line, and you hit your targets here. If you'll look at the bottom on the right-hand side, these are the lights I talked about. The two green lights show that you made this goal in this goal area last year, and you also made it this year. So as we go along, I'm going to explain. I think this is really interesting because it helps you kind of, oh, yeah, yeah, we did this last year and now we're doing it this year. And, oh, this one didn't. We didn't have this goal last year. So it's very helpful. The next one in the distribution system reliability is replacing underground cable. And you had a goal of 37,500 feet and you far exceeded that goal. And a lot of times, I know we talked about this last year, you know, staff would love to do as much as they can do that's necessary, but you can't always do it due to outages and construction things that come along and people digging into lines that you don't expect, things like that. But this was a good year, and they were able to complete a lot of this underground cable. The next one is in the customer. The next four are going to be in the customer area, and this is really focusing on the customer and doing enhancements that will help the customer. Three of them were accomplished. That was the goal. Well, the goal was two, and actually three were accomplished. These are pretty large ones. I can verify that upgrading your billing system or your CIS system is pretty difficult in and of itself, and they were able to accomplish several of these. So, again, they made the goal. You can see at the bottom, this was the second year that we had this type goal. Different measures underneath it last time. The next one is evaluating payment options and making recommendations. So the new e-bill system went online, and I think you implemented the e-bill system back in 2017, and so this is a revamped system. And staff got that launched, and you've got nearly 50% of your customers are getting their bill electronically. So that's a pretty high number, and it helps avoid costs, mailing, postage, that sort of thing. And it's good for customers. They like it. So the next one is competitive 1,000 kWh residential rate. Now, you'll notice the big red X. You did not make this goal, and there's a couple of reasons why that you didn't make this goal. And the idea behind this is to be in the lower one-third. And so you missed it by a little bit, but there's a couple of reasons that we've talked about among the staff, and that is, one, you had one less utility in there. You'll recall that Vero Beach is no longer a municipal utility, so that decreased the average a little bit. And then the other thing is two utilities reduced their rates right towards the end of the measuring period, and it was kind of unexpected, one by $5.86 and one by $18.95. So that kind of, you know, staff was projecting that you would actually make this goal, and then, boom, you didn't make it. But what I'm hearing this next year, it sounds like a lot of utilities are raising rates, so I think you're going to be in very good shape going forward. And you're already in good shape. I mean, you have excellent reliability, and you also have low rates. So, on this one, if you look at the lower right-hand corner, you'll see that you made it the first year. You had a similar goal the second year, and it's red. So that just kind of is how this system works. The next one is to maintain a minimum of 8.63 rating on customer satisfaction survey, and you met that goal. The result was 8.8 on this particular goal. And one of the things I want to point out on this is, first of all, this is a really good number. Compared to others that are in the J.D. Power survey, you had 8.88 on the residential. You had 9.01 on the commercial. OUC had 7.43, JEA had 7.37, Lakeland Electric had 7.15, and Duke Energy had 6.89. So it must be hard to be at the top all the time. Is that hard? I mean,
we make it work. We make
it's it work. Really great. I mean, your staff and you are doing a great job, and
we could do better.
Very good job. The next one is community outreach. So we've got a couple here on community outreach. This particular one is CEO participation in community events. I would say it's highly likely that you won't see this as a goal, objective, measure, target next year. It really doesn't fit into the strategic category, so we'll probably remove that one, just give you a little preview. But this one was achieved. The next one is involvement in the community. And this particular one, kind of shows you how much involvement you've had. So the target was 17 activities. The result was 26 activities. And again, this may be, there may be a better measure for what you're trying to achieve here. And so we'll be talking about that and looking at that over the next several months. And then the next one is to finalize the solar contracts and delivery details. This was accomplished by the timeline. And you'll see at the bottom, there was nothing in the previous year, but this one you accomplished. It was a new goal. You accomplished it. And so you've got one green light there. Next is the development of AMI. This is one of the ones that you did not meet, and you missed it by 11 days, which is a little embarrassing to say, because you still technically really, the staff did exactly what you wanted them to do, and I'm pretty excited that you've got 50% of this in already. That's very good. So one of the things I wanted to mention, though, when we talk about customer and also employee satisfaction, implementing this kind of stuff, you know, an AMI system throughout your community can result in a lot of change. People see things differently. They see equipment that doesn't work the same. Sometimes the equipment doesn't work for whatever reason. And so it can have an effect on your customers as you go forward and how in the surveying and that sort of thing. And then it can also affect employee morale a little bit, because you're going to have to make internal changes to how people's jobs and how they, you know, perform them and that sort of thing. So I just throw that out there as we start to work on next year's goals, that's something that we're going to have to pay attention to. The next one is critical system reliability. And the idea here is to maintain an average of 99.5% uptime. And the result was 99.93%. And again, two green lights at the bottom, because that's a similar goal each year. The next one is the electric vehicle charging, and that was accomplished and is installed and is in place at Osceola Heritage Park. So that's a green light. You didn't have a goal for that before. You did this year, so one green light. The next one is superior financial strength, and this particular one is an estimate. And again, I think that as we move forward and we get on a fiscal year basis for reporting, it'll make a little more sense. But they do think that we will meet this goal to have $6.7 million positive net income. So the target's positive net income. That's the number. And we believe we're in good shape for that. And that's all I'm saying about that, because you're going to hear from Kevin quite a bit this afternoon. The next one is to cultivate a great work environment. And this particular one, we have quite a few of these, and this may be an area where we try to tighten up a little bit and maybe not have quite so many activity-type goals and more strategic things. This particular one, manage employee attrition, very good again in this area. And I always like to tell people that, you know, attrition's not necessarily a bad thing. Sometimes you do want people to leave the organization. So as you look at these numbers, this is a great number and a great result. But just remember that attrition's not necessarily a bad thing. So you did make this goal. The next one is also in the employee area, and that's to maintain employee satisfaction rating. And I know a lot of utilities out there that would kill to have these kinds of numbers. That's a very good number, 97%. Your goal was 93%. You have 97% satisfaction. And I think the last time you had that result was 2014. So great, you know, very good numbers. The next one is maintain workplace injury rate. This one's near and dear to my heart, because it means employees go home healthy and happy to their family every day. And, you know, I hope this never leaves your strategic plan, because it's really critical. But it appears that you're going to make this goal. We're still waiting for some final numbers, but the injury rate was 4.7%. We'd love it to be zero, and maybe one of these years it will be zero, but the target was 6%, and so you're doing a very good job in that area as well. The next one is maintain health biometric screening. You hit this goal. You had 42% goal, and your rate was 57% participation. And that's roughly 168 employees, so again, a very high participation rate. And then that's our final slide that just wraps up everything I just told you. And I want to congratulate you because even though you missed two of them, I know that you've set the bar higher each year, and I also know that you barely miss these, and that you still have very good performance in these areas. So congratulations on that. And I also just want to thank you for allowing me to participate and sharing your success. It's really nice. And again, for the opportunity to be here today. And if you don't have any questions of me, then I'm going to turn it over to Mr. Crawford.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good afternoon. Madam Chair, were there any questions about the... Okay, thank you.
I was just going to make a comment that even though we had those two, but that's, in my mind, that was positive. Even though it wasn't the actual number that we were shooting for, but 35% versus 33%. It's close enough to me that I'm satisfied.
Thank you. One additional note to that, and thank you for that. We measure that metric, and you see it in your monthly packets on a fiscal life-to-date basis. We do it on a fiscal year basis, and we do it on the metric year basis. And we did meet it for the other two. We just missed it for the metric year. So we'll obviously strive to make that goal moving forward as well. So if there are no other thoughts or comments about the previous presentation, and again, thank you, Kathy, for doing that. Although we are from Gainesville, we didn't coordinate black and yellow today. That was not intentional. So wanted to give you some background. I'm sorry, I missed that. Sorry. So we talked to you last month about capital, and what we heard was you wanted to have a closer look at some of the details, and so we wanted to provide that opportunity tonight and facilitate that conversation. In order to do that, though, I wanted to step back just for a moment, and before the staff gets up here to talk about their capital budgets, I wanted to preface that with a discussion about how we do intend to pay for the things that we are recommending to you as staff. So we had a question last month about how do we intend to move forward, how do we intend to pay for those things? And I think that's a good question. And can we afford the capital that we're bringing you or that we brought you last month? And I think that was Director Urbina that asked that. And if I could give you a one-word answer that I'll qualify based on what I'm going to show you in a moment, the answer to that question is yes. We believe we do have a way forward to make that happen. And we do believe we have a plan that's capable of meeting. And here's the good part, and I'll let the cat out of the bag at this point. We do have a plan that allows us to pay for our capital and our O&M needs that we'll be bringing you while meeting all the fiscal policies set by you, the board, stay in the bottom one-third, not require us to issue any additional or any long-term debt, pay down our existing short-term commercial paper over the horizon of 5 years, and maintain fiscally healthy reserves. Now, my notes here say hold for applause, but I'll just skip past that. And one other caveat is that this plan also incorporates, as you're probably aware, some capacity credits that are going away from FMPA in the years 2021 and 23, or through 23. And so that's an additional hit that we're going to take. And the numbers are kind of moving around at this moment, but it could be up to about a $2 million hit a year for that capacity credit. But that's yet to be determined. So we've also baked that in a conservative view into these numbers. So before we look at that in detail, I just wanted to give you a quick overview of how funds move through our utility from a cash flow basis. We've talked about this some. It's always good to do a review when we're looking at budget. And one other qualifier is that we usually give you these numbers in the June meeting, But given the conversation that we had last time we met, we staff, we work on this continually. We look at this all the time. But we felt like it was incumbent on us to bring it to you some numbers, even if they're a little bit ahead of schedule, so that you could have this information as we go into the capital and the O&M discussions. So there may be some changes to this as we move forward, but I think the big picture will remain the same, and that is hitting each of the highlights that I shared with you just a moment ago. So let's move forward with that conversation if there's no questions about what I've shared so far. To begin with, we are looking at this from a flow of funds basis. So I don't want you to think in terms of an income statement per se, but I want you to think about cash flow, because cash funds our activities. And as we've come to relate to you, the thinking in our industry is that cash is king, and having the reserves that you need is a good thing. And being able to fund your operations on an ongoing basis is also something that's required. And so this is going to be a diagram of how the money flows into KUA and goes out the door. Now, you won't see this in your packets, and I apologize. This was a late-minute addition that we didn't get ready in time to go out to you Friday. So with apologies, it's going to be on the screen, but I think you'll find that it's fairly good to follow in the electronic format, but we'll provide this to you so that you can take that and take another look at it at a longer time. So you can see that we have really essentially two forms of revenue that come into the utility. They all come in through the billing system. They come in through our rate-making tariff, and those are our fuel and purchase power revenues and our non-fuel revenues. And you know that on each bill, we have a fuel component and a non-fuel component. That's basically all the revenue that we receive through the utility. So given the fact that we are expected to pay our fuel and purchase power bills first, those come out, and we'll show you on the next slide numerically how that happens. But basically, the fuel and purchase power expenses and the fuel and purchase power revenue will always equal one another through the COPA mechanism. So those really cancel one another out. So then what you're really left with is the non-fuel revenues and the non-fuel expenses. And those are the pieces that you develop your budget on and your expenditures on an annual basis to give you an idea of how much can we spend and how much cash will we have to expend on those, not discretionary, but those things that aren't in a higher priority of payment. So those things that we can actually have some control over to some degree. And so that gives you the net cash available. Once you take all those revenues and those expenses, obviously that gives you a net cash available. Then we look at capital projects and debt payments and repayments. So when we take a look at that, we look at basically our, and you'll see on the next slide, the non-fuel revenues minus the non-fuel expenses gives you a net cash available, and then we take out of that capital projects that we have brought to you and the board has approved for expenditure, and then we also figure out how to pay our debt service back and any other sources of funds that we may have or uses of funds therein. That gives you, on an annual basis, either a cash surplus or shortage. Now, that little box to your left, you could probably think of that. We kind of look at that. Well, that is what we call our general fund, and that is basically just an account that throughout the year it's going positive, it's going negative, depending on how much revenue is coming in and expenses are going out, up and down, up and down, up and down. And at the end of the year, if there is a positive number in that account, we move that money into rate stabilization. If there's a negative number there, then we'll move money out of rate stabilization so that we can make that a zero balance. And so what we end up with is a situation like this. We have annual cash surplus, and that would move into rate stabilization. If there is a surplus, and consequently that error moves both ways, as I just described, there may potentially be a shortage. Now, you'll recall in years 2016 and 17, we did utilize rate stabilization, a net negative number, rate stabilization reduced, because we ended up using more money in rate stabilization than we put back in there throughout the year. So then the other aspect I want you to think about, too, is this: the bottom one third. So in prior years, you had pre-funded a couple of capital projects, and we used some rate stabilization for that purpose, and even up to this past year in fiscal year 2018, we did. But going forward, what we anticipate is that the primary use of that rate stabilization will be for the bottom one-third metric. And so when you see on the next slide what that equates to, it'll give you an idea of the magnitude and how that works. But the good news is, in terms of, and we'll get into this on the reserve slide, that reserves are adequate to fund those capital requirements, and we have adequate revenues to cover those O&M and capital expenses without having to borrow that money. So looking at the flow of funds, this is now a numeric depiction of what I just described. And this is showing where we're at, 19, and where we think we're going to end up for this year, for fiscal year 19, and then the budget year 2020, which is what we're bringing to you this time this year. And then there is the five-year window of horizon that we anticipate. Now, the revenues, fuel, and purchase power recovery, or revenue, those are what are based on our load forecast. We get that from FMPA. We take a look at that every year. And then the expenses also. We look at our fuel expenses and project those out for this same period of time. And as you'll see there, as I told you earlier, fuel and purchase power revenues equal fuel and purchase power expenses. And they always will through the COPA because that's a true-up. There's no give, no take. That's what that is. So what that really leaves us with is our non-fuel revenues and our non-fuel expenses. And you can see that for fiscal year 20, and we'll look at the highlighted column there, revenues non-fuel is about 99.1, and our expenses non-fuel are 59.3, and that's our O&M and costs within that category. So what that gives us is some net cash available to spend of $39.8 million outside of fuel. So now we can look at, okay, we've paid fuel, we've paid O&M, non-fuel, what can we do with capital? So we look at a net number. So if you take the 99.1 of fuel versus of non-fuel revenues minus the 59.3 of non-fuel expenses, we get 39.8 cash available. Here's what we've budgeted to do with that money for FY20. We're going to recommend a net 21.3 usage of that in capital expenditures. Now, 21.3 million is a different number than what you'll see in the capital budget, and that's because this reflects developer contributions that we receive, and that offsets those line extensions to some degree. I think we budget about 90% of those on the external side to be reimbursed through the developers. So this is a net number that shows all those monies coming back. On the budget document, we have to show you the big number, the gross number, because we have to have authorization for the higher number in our budget resolution. But in terms of cash flow, this is how much will be actually going out the door on a net basis in the year. So we'll have 21.3 that we've budgeted to spend on capital projects. And then we'd like to recommend paying back the CP that we have, $43 million right now. And you'll see moving forward there on that horizon, $5 million this year, or 5.5. That's going to be interest expense on the debt. So 5.5 or $5 million this year, or in 20, $5 million in 21, $10 million in 22, $10 million in 23, and $3 million in 24, and that gets us to the $43 million. So that's how we would fund that on a flow of funds basis. And you can see moving through the horizon, when I get to the next line, that in every year we've projected to end up, even after we pay our non-fuel, our budgeted capital, and debt repayments on the schedule that we've projected, we would end up with a cash surplus. What are we going to do with it? Well, as I shared earlier, that would go into the rate stabilization. So we have a rate stabilization balance right now, and I'll get to this punchline. In fiscal year 2019, we project to have a $23.3 million balance in rate stabilization at the end of this fiscal year. Now, moving forward in 2020, as you can see, we have the $13 million that we project to have net cash. So that will go into rate stabilization. But you'll remember, I told you earlier about the bottom one-third and how we're going to use, moving forward, rate stabilization for that purpose. So you start with 23.3 at the end of this year. And going into next year, you'd add the 13, that's the residual after you've paid all your bills. And then we're going to take $10 million of that and use that to keep in the bottom one-third metric. And that would give us a rate stabilization fund balance of 26.3, or a net $3 million increase. The 13 minus the 10 is the 3 increase. You can do that same math throughout the time horizon, and you can see if there's a slight dip in 2023 with some expenses for O&M that occur. But for the most part, the real thing I want you to see is that 2024, on the bottom right-hand corner, we still project to have a balance of around $22 million in rate stabilization. Now, Kevin, that's not 50, that's not 70. Well, that's good, because we're using that money for a good purpose. We are basically paying all of our debt back, and we're using that money for, as the board has indicated they like to use, to keep us in the bottom one-third metric. And that money is being redeployed from being in a reserve status to helping our customers in a more immediate sense. And that's how we intend to utilize that. Now, money being used by rate stabilization for the bottom one-third and money being used for capital out of rate stabilization, those are all intended and good functional uses of rate stabilization. We don't get concerned when we see that happening. Where we in finance get concerned is we see that balance going below what we consider to be a safe number. And around 20 or so million, 15 to 20 million, is about where we think it should be. You'll recall we have a fiscal policy to keep it at 5, and that's the minimum. But we think it's good to have a little extra in there just for the sake of some type of unforeseen event and a hurricane or what have you. And so we keep that, we're projecting to keep around 22. So to give you sort of an analogy for that, we kind of look at it like, you know, we're in this vehicle and we're taking a trip together. And so finance is sort of planning this trip and we're looking at all the gauges on the vehicle. We're looking at tire pressure and oil pressure and gasoline. And we're making sure that we can get there into 2024 and even beyond. And we think, looking at this from an analogy standpoint, that while we're keeping an eye on all these gauges, we don't get concerned until something appears to worrisome to us. And the use of that money, we burn up gasoline, we refill the tank. That's the way rate stabilization kind of is for us. And we are replenishing it to the extent that we're using it. And that's a good thing. That's what it's supposed to be used for. And it gives us a safe bit of balance in there to use for something unforeseen. And so we wanted to share this with you because typically we show this, I said, in June. But I wanted to address some of the more immediate concerns of, before we look to capital, you might be asking me, well, this is good, but how do we pay for it? You know, how are we going to pay this? Well, this kind of gives you an idea of what we anticipate looking for the next 5 years, what KUA is going to do. Now, can this change? Well, obviously, yes. We know our financial situations change sometimes rapidly and sometimes repeatedly. But what we'll strive to do and what we do already is to look at this on a monthly, quarterly, annual basis. And we might get to you at the end of this fiscal year and look at 2020 or 2021 and we say, well, board, we've got a little extra money. We think it may be good to pay some of the debt down quicker. We might ask you or recommend that we could pay $8 million or $10 million instead of $5 million. We'll see when we get there. Or it may get the other way. We might say, well, we don't quite have enough to pay it back like we anticipated, but you know, we think that we can defer that. You'll recall that our original plan for this coming fiscal year was to pay back 20 and 23 in two subsequent years, to pay that 43 off in a two-year time frame. So you might be asking me, well Kevin, where's the extra padding come from? Well, that's a big part of that liquidity. We've kind of spread out that CP payback period. We've given you something that we think is optimal. We think that it's practical, but yet at the same time addresses our concerns about liquidity, bottom one-third metric, and we're not having to do anything rate-wise to impact our customers negatively. And so based on our best estimates right now, this is where we think we could move forward from a funding standpoint.
Any questions?
No, the question I have was the payment that we had anticipated in 20 and 21, which I now see spread, but you just answered.
Thank you. So that brings us to a discussion about reserves. And we have had a couple discussions. You recall our auditor even mentioned in his presentation to us about looking at rate stabilization, and we may need to fund some capital with debt, and that is still a possibility to consider if things don't go the way we anticipate. But right now, I just wanted to show you, and I think you saw in your packets, and I'll show you, the next slide will look just like what you got in your packets. But this is just to give you an overview of between fiscal year 17, 18, and where we anticipate 19, of what has happened in the reserves and sort of why that's happened. The debt bond resolution, we talked one time about long-term debt, and it's a good thing because we are involved in long-term debt at FMPA through the ARP, the All Requirements Project. We are obligated for about $300 million or one-third of that project's cost. So that is debt doesn't sit on a balance sheet, but it is an obligation to the utility. So we do utilize long-term debt to fund future customers' needs. But when you have bond payments like we had previously at the end of FY18, we paid all that long-term debt off. But we got rid of almost $25.8 million of bond resolution required funds that we had to keep on hand. So that keeps you from having to keep that money in stock and you can redeploy it elsewhere. So that's one reason why we typically, you don't want to issue long-term debt unless you really have to, and sometimes you do. But that's one reason to consider that. But you'll see there that the board sets the biggest piece, and we'll get into that. And let's just go ahead and get that on the next slide. The biggest piece of our reserves come from what the board recommends and through its policies. And so you'll see there the principal and interest, and this is sort of a breakdown of what you just saw on the previous slide. And you'll look at FY17 and you see the blue ones, those are all debt related. Well, those are gone now. in FY19. We fully expended those funds. I think there's a residual P&I of about 367 in there that is inconsequential. Customer deposits, you know, that's 13, and currently in FY19, it's 15.7. We can't touch that money. That's not available to us to use by law. We pay customers interest on those deposits. ARP working capital funds, being in the project, they require us to keep a certain amount of capital on hand there in case there are repairs to the units that are unforeseen, and so we keep that at FMPA. We can't touch that. So really the nugget here is what we can actually utilize for KUA's reserve purposes are the three items that you see to the bottom right-hand corner, and that is the reserve for future capital outlay, which is the, you'll remember the in the policy, it's the $5 million that gets indexed every year for KWH. Right now, it's at $8.8 million. Self-insurance fund is at $15 million. And rate stabilization right now is at $20 million. And those really are the three tools that we have, at the board has at its disposal to direct us to utilize in ways that it sees fit. Now, we had talked a couple of times, do we want to redeploy self-insurance to some extent and utilize that in capital? I think at this point in time, I wouldn't recommend it because I don't think there's a foreseeable need to do that. And it's sort of you get one hit, right? You get that $5 million and then you have to replenish it. And we're going to talk about what we think might be some good recommendations to change in the fiscal policies. But we don't foresee having to use those monies, and we don't foresee having to use the reserve for future capital outlay of $8.8 million. So while we've got adequate funding on the income side and we're able to provide some liquidity and removing some of that pressure through the deferring the debt payment through the five-year horizon, we think we can leave those intact for now and not have to utilize those funds. But as the board directs us, we certainly will do that. There was one question you might say as you look at line 7, the capital improvement fund. You say, well, why is that $33 million in 18 and there's nothing in 19? Basically what that $33 million is, and you probably remember this from looking at our budget resolution, that's an encumbrance against the general fund. So at the end of every year, we take a look at projects that were approved and funded by the board but did not get completed. And we roll that forward as an encumbrance against the general fund so that those projects can be funded in coming years and have adequate funding to pay for them. So the reason you don't see a number in 19 is we don't know what that will be till the end of this year. If we get to the end of this year and let's hypothetically say there's $10 million of projects that we had budgeted but weren't paid, we'll make that encumbrance then against the general fund and pay that going forward. Incidentally, the two biggest pieces of that $33 million were 1 year's funding for the AMI and also for the Domingo Torres substation. So those were the two big hitters in that $33 million. But that just gives you an idea of reserves. Because when we talk about reserves being depleted and coming down and going up, I just want you to see the whole picture and what we really have access to in order to affect outcomes financially here at KUA. So these are the policies that you have set previously, and you have asked us in prior meetings, do we have any suggestions for these, and do you think there might be time to update some? And there we have a couple of changes I'd like to bring to your attention tonight. Now, I don't think this will require formal action by you, the board. What we'll do is incorporate this into our budget discussion in June, but I just wanted to bring this to your attention tonight to receive your direction on it. But these are the policies, and I'll sort of go into a bit of detail on future slides. We don't recommend changing the bond proceeds fund transmission projects, which we also don't recommend changing current earnings. Any change to that shall be adequate to fund operating and maintenance, debt service related, and year-to-year capital needs of less than $100,000. We would like to ask for this one. Now, you might recall when we did some external line extensions, we brought to you a budget amendment last year to ask for an increase of, I believe it was $4 or $6 million for line increases with a budget amendment. And we used that money out of the reserve future capital outlay, but we returned it that same year because we had decided we need to replenish that fund. Well, that didn't really give us a lot of traction because to have to come right out of rate stabilization at the end of the year, the same year, and replenish it, you don't really do yourself any favors by using it and replenishing it in the same year. What we would ask or recommend moving forward is that if we use that at a future time, and we don't anticipate using it, but that the board would allow us to refund that over a five-year period based on the index that we utilize versus having to pay it back that very same year or that very next year, because you're not really helping yourself to use that and then repay it in that very same year. And that was the only recommendation for change we had to that. Then moving forward, we have a couple of language changes on some of the policies. Cost recoverable from future revenues, we don't use that term any longer, and we would like to strike that from this policy. And then for the debt service coverage, for the self-insurance fund, and the rate stabilization minimum, we don't recommend any change for those. And then the AMI project, we have a policy here that we'd fully fund that or maintain them at 25%. Well, that project is fully funded. And so it's an obsolete fiscal policy that we think we would probably like to remove if the board so chooses. That's basically the presentation that I have prepared for you as we get into our capital discussions. Is there any questions that I can answer?
If we can go back to the reserve for future capital outlay, are you saying...
The policy, I'm sorry, the policy statement, or yes, ma'am.
Yeah. So at the end of the year, would we expect to have the $5 million and then whatever we borrowed against it could go over several years to bring it above $5 million, or?
I think, and we could have been clear about that, I think what we would anticipate is whether it takes us below the five,
okay,
or we just take it down to five, let's say we borrowed seven. We would like to have a five-year horizon to pay that back over for that time period, regardless of what that, because it's at 8.8, regardless of what we borrow, we'd like to have the 5 years to pay it back, if the board would allow that.
What difference does it make, Brian?
I'm sorry?
What difference does it make if it's paid the same year or the year or the following year in
full? Because you're just going to pull out of rate stabilization that same amount of money that you, so you're not getting to defer that payback period. So if it's $5 million we take out this year, we have to pay it back at the end of this year, and that's going to come from rate stabilization. Whereas if I can delay that, rate stabilization doesn't get hit at the end of the year for that full five. I can build it back up, and then I can build this up as well. So it's easier on rate stabilization. It doesn't reduce that account balance as fast.
I kind of like that because the people that are paying over the next 2 or 3 years are paying for the capital outlay instead of today's people having to pay all of it.
That's a good point because we I think this was originally developed for Think Substation. Is that what was intended? And the life expectancy of that, the payback for that substation, they would typically expect over a five-year period to kind of get that funded anyway. And so that was, I think, what the intention was. So 5 years seemed like an optimal period of time for us as well.
I think it makes good sense to me. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Any other questions?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I will preface the next part of the discussion by saying that each vice president will come up now and they will share what you saw at the prior meeting, any changes that may have occurred, and they'll highlight some of their bigger projects. And then as you, the board, want to see additional detail on those, as Brian has mentioned on the ABC categories, we'll pull that up. So we're going to be kind of working in tandem over there. I've got Barbara Gonzalez. She's got spreadsheets ready. We've got the presentations ready. So we'll ask you to be patient with us as we make those switches back and forth if you want to see those. But we are fully intended to discuss those as much as you all want to discuss.
And board, if there are no questions, we won't pull it up. We'll just go to the next department.
Okay. With that, I will turn it over to, I believe, Larry Madden, Power Supply, will be up next. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Good evening, everyone. My report is just as it was last month. There's no change. And here's the major capital projects. Again, like I told you last time, under 20 there, the two that jump out, it's the Coleman facilities. And these, they're all in green, which I've told you the code here. That means FMPA pays for it 100%. The reason we show this, because we pay 30% of that, and you're part of that organization, and we run this plant, and we find it's beneficial for you to know. That's for the Sable pipeline. There's a gas pipeline that runs by there. We have two pipelines serving our own pipeline now. That gives us some security. The third, and we want to get away from using any oil down there, there's restrictions. That'll give us a third on security and an opportunity for getting lower-priced natural gas transportation possibly in the future. And then the other one that jumps out when we jump down here to the 3 million is K9 and 3. And that's actually a placeholder. We're having, as I told you before, we're inspecting our generator when we have the outage that year. And if the generator does need a repair, the repair to rewind the generator is $3.4 million. So that's the two. And other than that, the rest are incidental things for regular maintenance that we know that a certain amount of valves go bad and we have money to replace them. So if any, are there any questions on this?
Questions? No.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Larry.
Good afternoon. And I'm going to review the fiscal year 2020 engineering and operations capital budget. Looking at the budget, as Brian Horton mentioned earlier, the only change that we made for fiscal year 2020 was the adjustment of the internal and external line extensions. I'd like to recognize Nancy Wakefield, our financial analyst, who I drove nuts with trying to get a clearer picture in our crystal ball and what's going to happen with our development and what's going to happen with those, particularly the external line extensions, which we have very little control over. The 2020 placeholder that we had in April was about $16 million between those two items. With the help of Nancy, we were able to hone in on a more exact number, and we've come in right around the $12 million area. So we've reduced that by about $4.5 million combined between internal and external to get to what we think is going to be the actual expenditures for those in 2020. That was using going back to about 2017, where we really started seeing the rise in those expenditures due to all the development that we're seeing today. So that's the big adjustment. Everything else remained the same. GIS, about the $500,000 that's there, is due to some mandatory upgrades in software and that sort of thing for our GIS system. The distribution engineering is feeder extensions, again, but for specific projects, two of those being Domingo Toro, and as you recall, we're talking about adding a third transformer and switchgear to Horde substation that sits outside of this building to support the load growth in this area. So that's where most of that $3.6 million comes from in 2020. The T&D operations, as we discussed, that $12 million out of the 12.4 is the internal and external line extensions. And in power delivery, about 5.4 of that almost $7.3 million is the construction at Horde substation, the addition to the third transformer. And the other items, SCADA, again, is mandatory software upgrades, hardware upgrades associated with their communication and control system. Relay is some additional test equipment and relaying that, again, is mandatory replacement because of obsolescence. And the metering, excuse me, the metering is general test equipment and that sort of thing, some of that to support AMI, actually. So with that, are there any more specific questions on individual items?
Thank you, T.R.
All right, good afternoon.
Shorter.
Okay, you will notice a little change in what was presented to you before, and that was the rollover projects in budget 2019. We did move the AMI money into customer service. We're in the deployment phase, so we just shifted it from E&O into customer service. As I mentioned last time, we have two capital needs, one being vehicle replacements and one being electric vehicle charging stations, which we discussed briefly last time. So if there are any questions, if you want more information.
Thank you. Thank you, Susan.
Wait, when we got the packet?
Yes, ma'am.
At home, it was so much, that's why we probably may not have questions, because we were able to read it early and then ask Ryan if we had questions. So that's a really great thing that came out of the whatever, and we appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Now you can see why I have had them in paper for years.
Yeah,
I can't take a computer and look at it like I can write notes down here.
Well, hello, board. I'm giving you three presentations in one today, so I'm going to go quickly. But this is the semi-annual department highlights. That's why mine looks a little different than everyone else's. It's also a quick update on DDD, and then I'll be moving back in line with the budget reviews as we were doing before. So with that, moving on. I want to thank you for the questions that we had last time, because it made me go back and look at not just the forward costs in IT, but kind of where we've been. And with that, I want to just take a quick look back and kind of give you what's happened in IT, because it's interesting and it has a direct effect on why we're doing things the way we are now. If we go back 20 years ago, we all remember that phone. And we had three core things that we did in IT back in 1999, and that was we had our CIS system, we had our financial system, which was one and the same, a big, very outdated piece of software, and the typical office applications that you see, Word, Excel, PowerPoint, and email. And that green screen that you see, that's literally what it looked like to come to work at KUA back then. Everybody had to use a system that looked like that. It took about a year to train them. So it was awful, right? And it was also horribly, horribly expensive. It took 9 employees and about $660,000 in capital to make that work. And then this thing started to happen, and it didn't just happen to phones. It happened in IT, specifically our department, where there was this thing called convergence. And what you remember what it was like, where we used to have a separate MP3 player and a Kindle reader and all these different devices. And all of a sudden, it was all showing up in the same place, and that was on a smartphone. It was quite visionary, and there's no doubt that that was the invention of the year when it came out, because that wasn't just about phones. It was about what was happening in IT as an industry. As we were beginning to see this sort of change, that things that were never related to a computer department of data processing were now moving in to IT, and that started to happen and has never stopped since. And so we, as an organization, had to realize from 2000 on that we have to build something new. We have to go away from the mainframes. We have to start looking at how we can use servers instead of that one limited, one-time, one-use kind of system. And we've done that 4 times, by the way. It keeps growing, keeps changing. About every 5 years, we're reinventing the whole thing and replacing those systems out. But we needed to be able to allow one person with a computer to get to everything, and that meant lots of servers that were doing all the work in the background and bringing it to you. Before, you had multiple computers, or you couldn't even do it from your computer. You had to have special access. So we wanted one place for the user to work, and that was going to be at their workstation, and take all those different systems from running a credit check on a customer to taking a bill payment, put it all in one place so that the worker is more efficient. So all the work's being done by the computers, and the worker stays focused on work so they can do more. And eventually, of course, have a remote workforce, which we successfully deployed. And countless innovations that I won't go into, but a lot of things just sort of took on this charm when they walked into the IT door and said, can y'all do something with this? But that did mean reinventing how we looked to the world. And much in the way that the iPhone came out and changed what a phone was, IT, with its original 3 apps, had to start taking on new things. The first thing we did was we built a hot site. We never had the ability before this time to fail over live in a hurricane and have our data available the same day. It would have taken a week. And that was acceptable by industry standards, and it cost a fortune to do it, by the way. And that was one terminal talking to a center in Atlanta. Terrible system. Now we can do it live, and we do it all the time. And then we started adding more things. Of course, e-bill was starting to emerge. We were able to do more with customers there, let them start paying online. SharePoint, as our document management system, started standing up. And then the engineering department said, can you guys take phones? And phones were the old copper-style phones that you plug into a wall, and everything was manual. We had to switch all that out and make it into a voice-over IP modern system. So basically, we turned phones into kind of a computer system, because that was the trend in the industry. And along with that came security. Why don't y'all do something with these key cards? Why don't you do something with those cameras? And what do you think about having people work from home? Well, now we've built that whole platform, and we launched what is one of the most successful work-from-home programs in the country, believe it or not. How do I know that? Because I speak on it at conferences all over the country, and every single time I finish, for those who've been there when I do it, there is a line, literally, as soon as we say thank you and the applause is done, I have a line of people who are taking notes, asking more questions, wanting to come visit us, wanting to see how KUA pulled it off, and shocked that we have customer service reps who really just hardly ever quit. They stay while they've got a revolving door. Why? Because of the success of that program alone. But we couldn't have done that without building that platform, you know, that integration that made it so efficient. But we kept going. We had public records already, lots of paper in lots of boxes. Do you know how expensive paper is? Go looking for a document in thousands and thousands of boxes, by the way, to find you don't have it. And then you answer the public records request that you have to do by law to say we don't have it. And tomorrow you'll have to do it again. That's what we were doing. We digitized, we got away from paper, and when we were done with the paper, we couldn't just throw it in the dumpster. We had to pay somebody to come shred it and give us a certificate that by law says we dispose of those records properly. Why? Because they have customer information on them. Paper is really expensive, and it's a lot cheaper to fill up a hard drive than it is, of course, to fill up a room full of paper. We'd have another building full of paper right now if we hadn't done this back then. And another thing that came along was KUA.com as a portal, not just a postcard site that says, you know, this is KUA and here's like the phone number to call, but actually doing your business on the website, filling out the forms, establishing service, all of those things started to happen as well, along with the cool things we could do with eBill. So all of this is walking into IT, and you don't see any of these apps, so to speak, in this metaphor of IT going away. We're still doing all the original stuff. So that meant, of course, adding some bodies, some expertise. And we're very proud of our people. We have some of the best people in the industry by far. They're geniuses, artists, and they come up with some of the most creative ways to save us money. And I'll show you some of that in a minute. But from 1999 to present, we've added 10 people in all to IT. Very conservative, considering an industry that is truly blowing up. We've got one unfilled position that we're waiting for the AMI work to push us to hire. So we're very conservative there as well. So that's the staffing, and that's kind of how we got where we are today. But in terms of the money, now, if you knew that we were doing so much in 1999 and then today we're doing so much more, you would expect a graduating curve to the right of costs, right? It should cost more every year. Well, obviously I'm stacking the deck here because that's not what happened. Look at how much we were spending in 1999 and 2000 for those three basic horrible performing applications for IT to serve our customers. And then, of course, we see all the other integration and things moving into IT, but the costs are not blowing up. They're actually fairly reasonable. On average, about $500,000 a year in capital for IT. That's over 20 years, 20 years of an industry that is blowing up and growing and integrating even more. When you take the customer count that we've had over those same years, there's an interesting pattern there. You'll notice that we had about 52,000 customers there on the far right, or I'm sorry, on the far left. Those are the customers that were being that we were having to charge so much money just to support that IT. We were a cost of doing business. There was no benefit to KUA to have an IT department. We just had to have it. We weren't saving any money. We weren't being innovative at all. We were just getting the bills out the door. In fact, IT literally printed every bill back then in the IT department and then stuck it in an envelope and mailed it. Not the most efficient use of tech people. So we grew and we grew. We see that drop there around 2015. Everybody knows that's when Toho took over their own billing, and we saw the water drop there. But we already had a lot of those electric customers on our system. And here we are growing back. We're almost at 80,000 meters deployed in the field right now. So over 20 years, we've grown a lot, and here's our costs, but they're not skyrocketing at the same speed as our customer growth. An interesting thing to do here is if I were to take the dollars that we spent in 1999 and tried to spend them today, we all know inflation kicks in. That's how much we were spending in 1999 if we were to do that today, over $1 million for three horrible systems. And now here we are with all of the modernization, all of the great features in IT, and look at the price on the right-hand side. We're doing more today than ever before with less money. But what's that look like in terms of the customer? Because they don't really want to hear all the things that Jeff is doing to save money or whatever. They want to know how it affects them. Well, obviously, we're seeing a benefit because our customers prefer to do business where? Online, in ways that is convenient to them any time of day. And we have been building that. We've made a great investment in IT over the years. Thank you for allowing us to fund that. And now what we can do is we can say, customer, if you want to do business 24 hours a day, not a problem. You can pay your bill. You can go online and fill out the forms and establish service. You can do a lot of stuff, and we're going to be able to do even more in the future. But that trend right there are people walking in the lobby to do business with KUA over the last 10 years. And we see that same trend repeated in the cashier and teller area. People don't need to come to the building anymore. 5 years ago, if you wanted to establish service with KUA, you would expect us to be open and available to you when you got here. And you'd be upset that we weren't open later at night or earlier in the morning because that worked around your schedule. Today, if I asked a customer, can you please just come on in and we'll set your service up, the first thing they're going to say is what? You mean I can't do this online? I can't do this over the phone? Are you crazy? I have to drive there? How things have changed, and the investment in technology has paid off really great there. And as far as the road ahead, we have tremendous effort going on right now in terms of protection of our employees. We know this is unfortunately a reality of our day, but we have a great alert system that we're deploying out to the rest of the company. We've also, of course, cybersecurity. We've talked about this before. It's affecting our department tremendously, making our jobs harder in a good way, but also more complex. But it affects every employee in the company and every customer that we have, by the way. AMI, rocking our world. AMI is coming. We're already in the initial deployment area. We've just tested the workflows from all the way across the network to the meter, getting the read, bringing it back, and putting into a bill. All working, all built and ready to go. And we'll be sending those bills out, those first bills to those customers, I think in the next week, but definitely this month. So we're already that far along. That's a testament to all of the incredible IT, engineering, and customer service folks who've been testing and keeping this thing running. And then, of course, the one I'm most excited about is this portal, this new portal. It's like KUA.com, but it's going to be on steroids. And I'm not supposed to say a whole lot about it because it isn't built yet. It's going to take another 6 to 8 months. But this is what it's going to look like. It's going to be this place for customers to go and see a dashboard of their consumption. Finally, a gas gauge, a way to see where you are on your bill before you get it. Almost real-time tracking. In fact, you'll even be able to do things like ask your Alexa, how are we doing on the electric bill so far this month? And she'll tell you. Fantastic. Home energy reports, little green leaves, all that good stuff. Tons of features I don't have time to go into today because of the hour. But definitely where we need to be as a utility before our customers ask for it. Because by the time it's built, they'll be expecting it. So when you think of technology today, that's enough on the tools. I want you to just give me a moment here. If I were to take the paintbrush and the paints from Michelangelo and hand them to you, it's doubtful that you or I could go and recreate the masterpiece that he's famous for. Because we know that the paintbrush and the paint are just tools. If I were to hand you chisels and ropes and pulleys and say, why don't you go and build what the ancient Egyptians built, it's doubtful that you would be able to create such monolithic structures. Why? Because we understand that the tools are just that. They're tools. They are not the expertise, they are not the brilliance, and they are not the technology. It wasn't in the tools, it was in the minds of the builders. It is the reason that when we hear that our neighbors in Puerto Rico were devastated by Hurricane Maria, we didn't just put some bucket trucks on a boat and say, good luck. We sent line crews because we knew without the crew, the equipment was useless to them. The same is true in IT. No matter how many gadgets we buy, those are just little toasters down there with blinking lights as far as I'm concerned, without the geniuses of those people you see in that picture right there. That's my department, our crazy little group that we've been able to keep together and happy for decades now. We want them to spend their whole career here, and we thank you for being generous with pay and a pension that allows us to keep such great talent, because any one of them walking out the door is a fortune to replace. We can't spare a single person. We're that tight on our budgets and also on our dependence on their knowledge and their incredible creativity. And some of them are here today smiling right now because I never say such nice things to them. But that is the real. When you say the information technology department, I know we typically think of computers and wires, but that's not what it is. It is actually people that make that stuff work so great and keep our costs down. And with that, unless you have any questions on IT, I'll move into a very quick touch on DDD. Oh, thank you. And it's in Dropbox, and some of you may have already seen it. The good news is we're ready for hurricane season. I want to thank Director Hemphill for coming out. She drilled with us. She got to hit the button that locks everybody down, and it was great. Got to participate in some safety events. Great training. Everybody was on board. The whole company drilled. and we're ready for hurricane season. Tons of photos and documentation in your report, which I won't spend time going
through. We've got physical copies.
I think there's printed copies as well, if you wish to have them. But it should be in your Dropbox. And with that, I'm going to give them a second to switch over. Boy, y'all are quick. And go through my budget. I'm clicking, but maybe the mouse has moved. Somebody want to give me a nudge there? These computers, you just can't trust them. IT guys.
Yeah.
We'll be in a minute. Remember that nice stuff I said? Who is it? Yeah. Oh, I see it's Barbara driving over there. That's a finance employee. I just want to point that out. We ready? All right, we're ready. Thanks. They'll beat me up later, I'm sure. Okay, so IT, no changes. The main thing, of course, is that we have some very large server upgrades that are coming that we anticipate seeing, and some in the out years, some large storage. Now, I know there was a comment about hard drives and things like that. Why is that? Just to give you a sense of comparison, in 1999, since I've used that graphic already, we had about 200 gigabytes of data for the whole company, and that's the history of all KUA information, and that included Tohoku Water Authority, 200 gig, okay? We now generate that much data every 11 days. Every 11 days. We are writing 18 gigabytes. That's 12 million pages of data every single day at KUA. Now, that's computers talking to computers. That's not people typing that fast. But every transaction, every time we take a record online or a customer goes to our website and uploads photos and all that kind of stuff, it takes up space. And it obviously it's going to accumulate. It is not going to go away. But it's better to do it on a hard drive than it is to do it in paper or people walking in our door. So it is a cost of doing business, but it is a cost of doing the most efficient business, and both for our customers and for ourselves. So bear with me. I know I'm always asking for more hard drives, but you can see why with that kind of data being generated. But that's our business. Unless there's any questions on this, I'll move on.
Any specific questions on any of the projects?
Just a couple items on the highlights there, the bigger items, all servers and storage. Thank you.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you, Madam Chair. I will be brief, as I think I have almost as an easy job as Wilbur, because his is almost like mine. So I have one item that is only $7,000 for a copier in the finance department, and that is the only budget item that I have.
Oh, I don't know if we're going to approve that.
Just keep using the name.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And then it's also, as traditionally, I present the executive office, and there is no requirement. I'm sorry.
If everything is online, well, we need a copy of it.
We're going to use your paper. Jeff, you see what you did for me here? Come on.
We were paying attention, okay?
Thank you all. And at this point, I'll turn it to Judy.
Mine's not as simple as general management or finance. We require a little bit more. As you saw last month, the big driver is facilities maintenance. The building we're in now is about 27 years old, and the Lackey Service Center is 30-some-odd years old. So where we used to be able to repair things, now items are becoming obsolete. We have to go ahead and replace them. In fact, two of the biggest drivers in there is the fire system upgrade for this building. Our panel is original, and a backup chiller that'll also be for this building. We have a main chiller that's currently on order, but we have two. The backup is better used for the cooler months, a little more efficient, but the bigger ones appreciated in the summer months. And I'll entertain any questions on this.
Any questions?
Thank you.
Thank you, Judy.
Wilbur? You're up.
Were we not making IT progress, then my slide didn't ta-ta. Come up yet. So.
All right.
Well, no change from the directional meeting. I only have one capital item, and that is a online tracking employment system for our employment application for people applying for jobs. And what we are concerned with right now is the possibility of the carpet being pulled from us with the current provider, because they are now migrating towards the academia world. They are kind of walking away from the academia world. And so they are now walking away from other industries. And so we don't want to just get surprised at the last minute with them saying that can no longer provide us a service. This software also comes with a training program that's better than what we currently have. To that end, we think that we probably not renew our current training program, as these offer more diverse subjects, and also it's a more user-friendly program. So that's our $48,000, a bit more than Kevin, so, but that's all we have.
Well, we don't need a printer. We don't need no more paper.
What I think. That's those dollars probably won't go far. Yeah. Okay.
Thank you.
Chris,
yes,
communications.
Yeah, corporate communications. We had two capital items. One was the redo of the KUA website, which, as Jeff alluded to, is our single biggest cash register for the utility. So we're going to bring that up. It's been almost 4 years now since that's been done. And also replacement, not until next year, of the community grill. Most of our vehicles have a time and mileage combination, but because we don't have an odometer on the grill, we know it cooks 75,000 meals a year, but we don't have. So it's at the point where we're having to replace more and more pieces. It's having to be sent back to the manufacturer to be upgraded. And so we're nearing the end of its life. So those are the only two we have.
Questions?
Madam Chair, out of everything, I think this is the most important part. Cooker.
Very good. Okay. That means that. Anything else? New business? Staff report, we're down to hear our attorney.
Thank you, Madam Chair and board members. Just really a legislative update for you tonight. House Bill 327, government agency meetings from public scrutiny when they're discussing cybersecurity issues, that has passed both houses. We expect the governor to sign that bill into law. The other bill that we worked on very hard in Tallahassee, House Bill 591/Senate Bill 600, that bill's really important, especially in light of what we looked at tonight when we were looking at a customer's consumption record for a discrete period within a monthly billing cycle. You may recall that those bills would exempt from public records disclosure any of that information that's less than a billing cycle. It's passed the House unanimously. It's passed every Senate committee. We're waiting for them to schedule it for a floor vote. We're just waiting. We're hoping it'll happen before the end of the session, which is this week. I'll keep you posted. Hopefully I'll have good news next month, if not sooner. And finally, you may have heard about an effort to put on the ballot for 2020 a constitutional amendment that would mandate the deregulation of the electric industry. It directly applies to investor-owned utilities. It actually is written in a way that it looks like investor utilities, if it passed, would be required to get out of the generation and transmission and distribution business. It would not require us to opt in as municipalities, but given that we rely on our investor-owned utility friends for much of the transmission service throughout this state, because they own most of the lines, that we have very large contracts, all municipalities, and particularly FMPA, for purchase power, and we're also joint owners on generation assets owned by investor-owned utilities. If this bill passed, even if we were opted out, it would have disastrous, chaotic, complete chaos to the electric industry within the state. The League of Cities estimates that in terms of lost utility taxes, lost franchise fees, lost ad valorem taxes, a hit to local government of over $1 billion in the first year alone. You have numerous parties looking to oppose it. Now they have enough signatures that the state Supreme Court has to review the question that they've presented and see if it meets scrutiny to be allowed on the ballot. FMPA and FMEA have filed a joint brief opposing the Supreme Court approving this ballot language on two grounds. One, they say it fails to satisfy the single subject requirement. Every constitutional amendment you propose has to touch on one subject. If it doesn't, it'll be thrown out. The argument is that they offer customers an unlimited choice of electricity providers, but then without notifying the voter, they disassembled the entire existing regulatory framework overseeing the electric industry in the state, which has been going on since the 50s for 60 years. It just junks that entirely. It doesn't tell the voter they're going to do it. They did a financial impact statement and claimed that there would be positive economic benefits of a very vague nature. They didn't factor in all these other things that I discussed. The opponents are diverse. You have us. You have all the utility groups, the investor in utilities, the co-ops. You have the Audubon Society is opposing this because they believe that if this constitutional amendment passed, it would jeopardize existing Florida law that requires conservation and use of renewable resources. The Chamber of Commerce is opposing it because of the dislocation. So we're doing our part. FMEA and FMPA are fighting this at the Supreme Court level. I hope for a good decision coming out of there, disallowing the amendment in its current language. And I'll keep you posted. I stand for any questions.
I have a question. I hear that there's something up in the legislature, and if they only have a week, it may not be going to happen, that will limit the amount of
makes it harder to pass a constitutional. Yes, it would make it more difficult to get a constitutional amendment on the ballot. It's passed the House, but it's stalled in the Senate right now. I think the only way that would happen would be if you had one of these last-minute deals where some things, you know, sneak through on the last day, but it hasn't even had a committee hearing in the Senate side yet, unfortunately.
Yeah, that's always been a peeve for me, representation by petition. You know, that's...
Oh, absolutely.
The laws are made by petition, not by representatives.
We amend. We seem to take more thought ordering dinner than amending our state constitution,
exactly.
It seems.
Exactly.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
General Manager.
Okay, Board, you've got your reminders there on the screen. I really don't have very much other than I want to really thank staff for all the work that they did pulling this budget together. I had some requests of them. I really want to thank Kevin's team, but each department really did a bang-up job, and so I appreciate that. That's all I've got.
Nothing for me?
Yes, I have one item. Back, if you recall, when we were, it was in February, when we were looking at the interviews, and I had become concerned about having to have everything live streamed. Since we, Kathleen and I learned back at the last APPA conference, there are methods available to organizations to stay within these guidelines of the Sunshine Law and still be able to have discussions. There have been sometimes, because we have had a couple of workshops where we've had discussion items and gone through them, but I actually had the information that Fred Cumbie had provided me, which I forwarded to Grant, and asked him if he would look into whether or not it could be done legally, and, you know, would we have too much grief from other people about it, because I personally believe that the board meetings, the ones that were just like today, should be live streamed for those people that would like to know and can't get here. But I'd also like to be able to have certain things where we can do them as workshops. We'll still notify the public, and we'll have you know, the recording of the minutes, etc. But I personally would like everybody's agreement that we could at least look to staff to bring us something back. Because I think we need written policy on what we're doing. I think that will provide us some benefit in having it in writing rather than just having it done based on practice.
Yeah, and I'll just put a reference. I'm glad you brought that up because with us in the city and even the county, we live stream commission meetings. When we do workshops, we don't live stream commission workshops. We have our city clerk taking the minutes just in case it gets requested by anyone. When we have interviews, and all of you have been an interview by us, the commission, we have the city clerk taking minutes. So I don't see where the issue is on that. I'm not an attorney, but I don't foresee that that's going to be an issue. And I'm glad that you brought this up because I think that that's important for us to change that direction of how we do those interviews. And again, your workshops, so you can work much better on them.
Brian, did you have something?
Yes, ma'am. Madam Chair, if it's the direction of the board, staff can go back and draft some language to bring back in June for board consideration.
I would absolutely request that myself. And it's always bothered me because when you're live streaming, you tend to hold back and not really discuss things the way they should be discussed. And so therefore, this will allow us to have a more open discussion and without having to worry about feelings or anything else.
And something that I left out, when we have those workshops, you advertise them.
Oh, absolutely.
And the public is allowed, if they want to come, they're right. Allowed to attend. So
right.
So we're not keeping anything away from the public. It just makes it much easier.
Not streaming them.
Yes, yes.
And on that point, Mr. Mayor, Madam Chair, I'd recommend that our workshop agendas state that these meetings are not live streamed. So then the public knows that they can come here, you know, if they wish. But yeah, we'll bring that back in the next.
We'll target June, yes, ma'am.
Yeah. Well, let me start with the FMPA presentation, which I understand the city is going to hear in the not too distant future. Am I correct on that?
Okay.
May 7th. Yes.
Yeah. This was presented to the policymakers back in January, and I came with the intent of talking about it then, but we were sort of busy and tied up, so I didn't bring it up. But they did all their research using Kissimmee as their database, and I think I would like to suggest that we have Jacob come and do the presentation for us at a meeting that maybe not the next one because we're doing budget stuff, but at some point when we can slide it in. And it's really something we need to get out into the community so they understand monetarily what KUA is given to the community. It's a little dry for just the general public, but for groups like, Rotary Clubs or Chamber of Commerce or like Leadership Osceola or School of Government for the city. There's so many places, if we can modify it, shorten it a little bit, have somebody on our staff that can go give that presentation, it really is worthwhile. So
that would be something Chris would probably take care of.
Madam Chair, if it's the direction of the board, Madam Chair, we can have Jacob come and give that presentation to the KUA board, and then we can work with our staff on tailoring it.
Yeah.
That May 7th, that's correct.
Paperwork of it.
Okay.
The other thing that we discussed this month was the solar fields that are going in, and Larry can correct me when I start wrong, but they're talking a lot about how to charge people and that sort of stuff, and they're using us for an example. So again, I think we've gotten kind of ahead of things and set up a system of payment that other people are taking notice of. The size of the solar fields is 900 football fields. There's going to be 900,000 panels, and they're going to generate enough electricity out there to take care of 37,000 homes.
Are these the ones over in Cocoa?
The first one to go in is at Harmony, and it's already, well, the approval will be by October, and the construction will start in January. And then behind that one is what's called Taylor Creek, and it's up in Orange County. And then the next one is Poinsett, which is back down in Osceola County, and it's on down below Holapaw.
It's going a little north of it.
Okay.
Going east and north of it.
Okay. So, and one thing I had requested and talked to them at FMPA a little about, and then we've talked a little about too, is the paperwork we got about the cost of rooftop solar versus community solar. I see us needing another component, and that's if somebody puts rooftop solar up there, they think they're going to not have to pay anything, and all of a sudden all their solar needs are free. I would like for us to have some statistics on what do they truly end up paying, not just maybe in KUA, but in OUC or Lakeland or wherever. Because when we present to people, if you want solar, you can do it through community, we're saying, and you can pay some more. So somehow they need to understand that when they put this $25,000 thing on their house, they're not free of all electric expenses beyond
that.
Remind
me, did we not already talk about this?
Not, Madam Chair, not to the level that Director Thacker's talking about. Yeah.
Presenting to the public.
That's correct, and we
additional cost.
We'll be working on that.
Because I think we've talked about this before. That I don't know if we had a program that we were going to go.
But you're talking about besides the $25,000
that's
right. Cost them
yeah,
to
that's
install
right.
it.
Yeah. This that we got pretty well tells us about the fixed cost for the solar, but it doesn't tell people what they're really going to be paying by the month to have electricity after dark.
Just a little piggyback on that. One of my neighbors did put a system, and he told me that he's averaging like $30-$35 a month in a bill. Besides the bill that he's paying for the actual system, but he feels that in 10 years the system would be paid and he owns completely free bill and just having a little bill. And that's the reason he went with the system.
And we're also working on videos and calculators for KUA.com as part of our marketing.
I think this is the reason why we did address this a while back about reaching out to other resources as far as not just sales of electricity, but other things that you can be doing.
Correct. Okay.
Ethel?
Nothing.
Annie?
Yeah, I got one thing. Maybe it's going to take a minute or two.
Fine. I'll start timing you now.
Start timing. During the process for the new CEO, one of the things we emphasized was the succession plan that they should have in place among the staff. And that brought a thought to myself that as a board, that maybe we should have a succession plan. I know the charter allows us, tells us, mandates us to every year to vote into the different positions on the board. But I was thinking more in principle to have a system where, for example, the normal term is 10 years, five, and then five, and if you do get the 10, to come in, the first 2 years, you're going to sit, and you're going to learn, then the second year is assistant secretary, and so forth, and then within 10 years, you should be able to chair the board. And obviously, it's no reflection on you. I'm not thinking about that because, we've had a tough year this year with the new CEO and so forth, and you've been brilliant at it.
Thank you.
There's
a lot of sweat and tears.
It is a very difficult job. But I just think that's a succession plan that we should have. And right. I just want to put that out. I don't want to obviously discuss another something to think about. So that because I think everyone that comes on the board is capable to move up and do and fill every position on the board. I don't know if we'd legal could look at it. And I don't want to change the chart. I just want like an agreement in principle. If I could, that when it comes time to have that in mind as a board.
Anything else? I don't have anything. So that being said, meeting's adjourned.